One, hold the paper up. One, two, three.
You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday, Tuesday, Casual Tuesday, Wednesday, Casual Hump Day, Thursday, Casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, December 13th, ooh, 2013. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's scary, folks, and it's casual. Joining us today, Cliff Schechter, to talk about the week that is, was, and will be. Also on the program today, the comedian Judy Gold, to give me a movie review. Yes, folks, it's Casual Friday. Also on the program, fallout from the budget deal. The biggest of which is that 1.3 Americans will be cut off from extended unemployment benefits, costing this country half a percentage point on GDP, hundreds of thousands of jobs because of lack of demand, and really the real cost here is an incredible amount of pain and suffering for Americans who lost their jobs in the wake of the financial crisis. Meanwhile, in Michigan, the Michigan state government passes an incredibly vicious law, which is it's hard to believe it's legal, basically saying that insurance companies cannot provide in their standard plans, even for employers, abortion coverage, and will probably not offer, but they probably won't do it, which is a problem really mostly for women who need an abortion or seek an abortion, either because of rape or because of fetal abnormalities. We will talk about that as the show progresses. The Iran deal looks safe for the time being. Congress will not impose new sanctions upon Iran, at least in the short run. The Pope still speaking out against all sorts of income inequality. More on that affluenza story and more today. Let me remind you that tomorrow, well, I should say that Credo Mobile is sponsoring the program this month. You all know what I think of Credo Action, which is funded by Credo Mobile. They do really great work. They're not afraid to burn bridges. They rally against the right in this country, and they also push Democrats to the left. They also contribute 1% of their revenue to progressive nonprofits as well, in addition to funding Credo Action. Obviously, you know, people ask me about coverage. They have a coverage map there. Check it out. But if you're paying for phone service and you can get good coverage of Credo, why wouldn't you do it? And in the past, there's been reasons, well, they have a limited selection of phones. They have now a much broader selection of phones. You gotta at least check it out. They're giving you 25% off of your total data, unlimited data for 2 years. They're giving you a $350 credit to buy out your existing contract. And like I say, they have an unlimited array of phones now, or a less limited array of phones now. So check it out. Go to credomobile.com/Sam. The deal lasts until tomorrow evening, Saturday evening. I think they're going to give us another deal for the rest of the month, but I'm not sure what that's going to be. So check it out now, credomobile.com/Sam. We obviously have a link. Check out the graphics on our homepage at majority.fm. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It is Casual Friday. And you know what that means, folks. We don't like to keep you guessing on Fridays. That means that Cliff Schechter is joining us. But you also know, before we have Cliff Schechter, we have his theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations. And strategy, you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
That's right, LibertasLLC.com. Welcome to the program, Cliff Schechter.
Why, thank you, Sam. It is always a pleasure, as you know.
Yes.
My deep and profound pleasure.
Now we are we're basically, this is our second to last program of I should say Friday of the year, Cliff, so we're winding down. Things are starting to get a little quieter on the political front, but there's still plenty to talk about. But one thing I want to talk about, you know, I think any of our regular listeners are aware that you have spent about as much time as anyone over the past couple of years on trying to promote some type of sensible gun reform that appears on a national level to be not within reach at this point, but you know, we're I guess it was about a year ago now, right, that the horrible tragedy at Sandy Hook took place. And
yeah, we were actually on the radio when it was going on and didn't know. We were talking about something else and started talking about it. And, you know, tomorrow it'll be a year since it happened to the day. You know, I don't think we knew at that moment what a transformative event. Sadly, I had kind of been writing some pieces at a variety of places predicting, because it was sort of very predictable. And what's really kind of more surprising is that more things like this haven't happened in the years since, although we did have the Navy Yard incident, which was pretty terrible, and a number of others that thankfully weren't quite as bad. But it was entirely predictable. I think I kind of thought more something like what happened in Mumbai, where there were sort of roaming bands of a couple of terrorists each, you know, who were talking to each other and targeting hotels and train stations. But obviously I couldn't even get to the point where I could imagine that kind of horror. Maybe because I've got young kids, you don't want to ever even think about that. But you know, yes, it has transformed the whole debate and the way this country thinks about the issue. I would say, you know, when people say, well, have we been successful in the last year or have we failed in the last year? My answer would be both.
Right.
You know, in terms of that group of hooligans that we call the U.S. Congress, you know, I mean, they have literally, I would say, forsaken their constitutional oath, which is about protecting domestic tranquility and you know, and the rest for people here, people's right to happiness. And I mean, they have literally sat there knowingly, looked at something that they know is killing people, that they know doesn't have to be killing nearly as many people, and because of money they're getting from the NRA and the associated groups, they've chosen to do nothing. I don't know how those people sleep at night, frankly. It's sad and it's kind of pathetic, and as they are. But on a broader level, you've seen so much change in the last year. You know, you've seen a group like Moms Demand Action pop up that has 125,000 members and groups around the country now. You've seen Mayors Against Illegal Guns, with whom I used to work, and I still work occasionally on a project here and there, which is chaired by Mayors Bloomberg and Menino. Who both of whom will be ex-mayors, or I guess Menino. Is Menino already an ex-mayor?
Yes,
I don't know.
Or
is it, I mean, and Bloomberg will be. You know, they chair it, but there's, you know, now there's over 1,000 mayors around the country, in some very small cities as well as some very big ones, and who are very involved. And so, you know, you had a setback, for example, in Colorado when the NRA used a very specific case where they had a friendly right-wing judge throw out mail-in ballots and say, you can't use it because this is a referendum, not an actual election, where the people there were all used to using mail-in ballots because they had instituted that. So they suppressed votes, essentially, and they did it in the off-cycle of the off-cycle, right? I mean, it was like not even just an off-year, but it was not even during a normal election period, and they found a way to knock out two Democratic legislators. But then you had Terry McAuliffe in Virginia, which used to be Dixie, stand up and proudly run on being in favor of not only background checks, which is, you know, hugely 90% popular, but an assault weapons ban and limiting magazines, you know, which is what was in the federal legislation. And he won, and, you know, he not only did he win in the first time since Nixon's administration, when the sitting president, the governor who won, was of the same party as the sitting president in Virginia, but they swept all three of those major races, governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general, for the first time in I don't know how long, but many years, 30 years, something like that. So, you know, there have been a lot of things. Culturally, changes happen. I work with a group these days called the National Gun Victims Action Council, who's the guy who is the founder, Elliot Fineman, lost his son senselessly. His son was murdered in a restaurant in San Diego because a paranoid schizophrenic who should have never had a gun got his hands on a gun. And it led him to walk away from a Fortune 500 marketing career and start this group. And he was the one who came up with the idea in February, around Valentine's Day of 2012, to start a boycott against Starbucks, who wouldn't allow, of course, open carry of guns in their corporate offices, because God forbid they be in danger, but allowed it in stores around the country in states that allowed that. And other groups joined in, and Starbucks backed down just recently, 2 months ago, and now is not allowing that. So, you know, culturally, there's been a lot of change. A lot of these channels that were featuring some of these shooting shows, you know, I don't want to say what, because I can't think of what you, but the Outdoor Channel or whatever they are, have canceled them. Things, you know, a lot of things have changed. And a lot still, you know, these are long battles. Anybody who, if you want to look at anything from civil rights to women's suffrage to anything else, you don't win these things when you're fighting entrenched forces overnight. But a lot has changed in a positive way in the last year, and yet we don't have the federal legislation we want or need. So there's where we are.
It's so heartbreaking. I mean, I should just say, I want to just, you know, point people to mysandyhookfamily.org, which is a site where you can go and make a donation to either to individual charities that in some way reflect what some of those kids' interests were. Down in the left-hand corner, you can actually just make a contribution to the Sandy Hook Family Fund. I haven't really been able to spend too much time on that site, frankly. I mean, I've tried. I think, you know, you and I both have young children, and certainly it becomes so visceral, the pain that a family must feel in that type of situation. It really is. I mean, I've seen some interviews with some of the parents, and it really is. It's just unbelievably heartbreaking. And you know, and with that, you know, we should also, you know, mention the heartbreak that, you know, one feels when you look at those families. You also have to be able to extrapolate that same heartbreak for, you know, parents of people who are, you know, this is unrelated from as a political issue, but in some ways it's not. You know, when we see family members come to Congress, as we did about a month ago, talking about our drone program, you know, those parents who have small kids who have died in, you know, because a bomb came out of the sky. This is the, you know, to a certain extent.
Or, you know, not to cut you off, but parents whose children, and there are in certain states, you know, now because their governors refuse Medicaid, don't have health care, you know, and have to watch their kids suffer. Or, I mean, you know, anybody who can't. And you're right, Sam. I, you know, gun violence just happens to be an issue that I know very well, and I've worked on, and I've met, you know, these parents in, from Newtown and Aurora, and it's, you know, it's heartbreaking as it can possibly be. While also, you'll be amazed at the strength these people have because they're determined to change things. And yet, you know, the never do I ever say any of that stuff, you know, or talk about it. It's just an issue I know best. It doesn't lessen the pain of parents who've lost their kids because of lack of health care or because of a bomb that flies out of the sky or anything else. And frankly, not just, I mean, kids are easily the thing that is the most gripping, I think, for almost anybody. But certainly for people like you and I who have young kids, perhaps even more so. You know, but we need to take all of these issues seriously, and we need to look at all this as sort of a fight. It is. And when these right wing lunatics are trying to cut Social Security, a lot of Social Security, it's the biggest benefits program most people don't know for kids because of the survivor's benefit.
Right.
Which makes that, he makes, when these guys, when these clowns write their op-eds from their well-funded think tank, you know, in the Wall Street Journal, I promise you they're not sitting there thinking about the kids who might suffer, in addition to elderly and other people because of, so, I mean, yes, you know, I think those of us who do this and do this from the perspective that we do, probably, you know, we think that way a lot. We have that weird thing called empathy that doesn't exist, it seems, on the right.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, that's a decent segue into, you know, what we've just seen passed in Washington, and this sort of, you know, I understand that the commentariat, and both of us are, of course, are card-carrying members of the commentariat, but The sort of applause of like Washington's working again, and they've been able to come together. Left out of this deal, of course, is, I mean, left out of those assessments is, of course, that we are our discretionary spending is still below levels as to where it should be in terms of the services that are needed. And we know this because we can look at the literally tens of thousands of kids who can't go get into a Head Start program. We can look at this and we know what's happening to medical and scientific research across the country. And, you know, we can look at what's happening in terms of massive food stamp cuts and 1.3 million Americans who are going to, as of, you know, I guess 2 weeks from now, 2.5 weeks from now, are going to lose extended unemployment benefits, and the incredible amount of hardship that these people are going to endure. It is really just, it is enraging to me. I don't know at what point, I mean, you know, this is something, and we've talked about this week quite a bit, about the sort of the, I guess it's sort of like a prisoner's dilemma, right? Where, where the anyone who has any sense of empathy for people in general, anyone who has any sense that government should function,
right?
You know, is in a dilemma here, where, you know, the cost of fighting brings pain, and the cost of not fighting brings pain to people. And you know, we're going to see, I mean, God willing, there is no farm bill passed, because then essentially you're sparing people from more cuts at this point when it comes to food stamps. But again, the lack of extension of unemployment benefits is just, it is wrong on so many levels that it's hard to sort of fathom.
I guess I can look at this particular situation, this budget, and what just, you know, occurred with Murray and Ryan as a similar way to the way I just described, you know, the gun violence, which is to say, you know, have things gotten better? I mean, have you seen all the pushback, you know, against Third Way, and how they've gotten slapped around, and how their own, you know, board member, Alison Schwartz, who's running for governor, in Pennsylvania, was forced to embrace the plan to increase Social Security? All the different ways that they've taken it on the chin since they threw that out there tells me that we're not living in the DLC's world anymore.
Right.
That the progressives have, you know, this is a long battle, and we are slowly but surely taking back the Democratic Party. And it's becoming the default and majority position is becoming the one, you know, you've got candidates in a bunch of states now, including, you know, one of the first ones who I'll give credit to, Alison Lundergan Grimes, who came out against Mitch McConnell immediately and pointed out that he'd become a millionaire while he was in the Senate. But why was it that he'd voted time and time again against raising the minimum wage? So, you know, to me, we're moving in the right direction. With that said,
right.
This budget's still ridiculous. I mean, it doesn't. Again, this budget does not reflect a country where the President Obama was overwhelmingly reelected, where the Senate, they've had chance after chance the Republicans to take back the Senate and have been unable to do so because the people they put up with their ideas are crazy and lose, and that the Democrats won the House by 1.4 million votes, and it's just the gerrymandering that kept it in Republican hands. These guys won on absolutely zero levels in that past election. And that they're still able, in the end, they want, what were the numbers, 967 or whatever it was, you know, billion, and the number Democrats wanted, which wasn't enough, my numbers somewhat wrong, 1.48, I guess it ended up at 1.1012 or whatever the hell it is. You know, frankly, with no unemployment extension, with the fact that they're taking some money, you know, they're doing some cuts and asking public workers again to sacrifice, to me, literally, I think that the stance has to be, you cannot ask anyone to sacrifice until you close the carried interest loophole. As long as that exists, as long as you allow people making $600 million a year in private equity to pay 15% in taxes, I'm sorry, you can't ask anybody else to sacrifice. That would be my position. You either close that, or I'm asking nobody to sacrifice anything. There's a couple places where obviously where you should be running to start with to get funds. The $40 billion over 10 years that the oil industry gets in subsidies. That would be a place.
But, you know, I mean, here's my
closing corporate loopholes.
We
that
don't
would be
even
a place.
Need to. I mean, you know, the we have lost the battle even when we're talking about pay fors. You know what I mean? I mean, the idea that, OK, like, you know, this we have the deficit has come down at a rate that is unprecedented.
Let me say something, though, very quickly, Sam, because I know what you're going to say. I'm not saying we should be doing and right. You're right. I don't know that I phrased it the right way. I'm not saying we should be asking that. Because that we should be using that money to pay down the deficit. I'm saying that should happen because that's simple fairness.
Right.
That's simply putting fairness back into our tax code and into, you know, and that's the morally right thing to do. And no, I wouldn't spend any of that money on the deficit, which is coming down, as you point out, dramatically. I would use that money on infrastructure investment and Head Start and things like that. Just all the priorities right now, we're still playing by their rules. And we've done a better job with this budget than past budgets playing by their rules. But it's still, they have an outsized amount of power for people whose ideas are hugely unpopular, have been discredited every time, and if we took it to the American people right now and had debates around the country or just we showed up and dared Republicans in those districts to show up, just dared them to, said, let's debate what you think makes more sense. Should we give people an unemployment extension, or should we make sure that people making $600 million a year pay higher than 15%? What do you think? Obviously, we need to make the whole argument to people that you're making right now, which is, you know, the deficit doesn't matter. It's quickly shrinking, and frankly, it doesn't matter nearly as much as you know what we should call the employment deficit.
Right.
It's the employment deficit that is the problem, because if people go back to work, guess what? They'll pay tax revenues and the whole thing will sort itself out. But the big problem with that is that President Obama has never made that argument from the beginning.
That's right.
And that puts us in a terrible place to make that argument.
I mean, let's take maybe this might be the final occasion to piss off some Obama bots, but the sequester was a political malfeasance. Insofar as it completely underestimated, I mean, we should say now that the biggest chunk of, you know, the big leverage point, right? Let's just go back one more time to how the sequester came about. The assumption was in the Obama administration that if we threaten the Republicans with this notion of cutting the military, then they will chuck out the entire idea of the sequester. They were wrong, A, at that time. B, with this deal, much of the pain that, but much of the cuts that were going to be specifically targeted at the military have now been reversed. Remember, like, most of those military cuts were going to come this year, and about two-thirds of those cuts have been restored. It was political malfeasance, and it was instigated because of also a policy malfeasance, which was they were buying into the notion of austerity. And
and Obama was making that unbelievable argument about comparing, you know, our the way the workings of our economy and our government to a family.
Absolutely.
Which in no way has comparing apples and oranges.
And to the extent that that has ebbed on a federal level, we still feel the implications of that austerity rhetoric. I'm just talking about the rhetoric. Never mind policies. Obviously, has permeated every aspect of our society. I mean, every level of government. But from a rhetorical standpoint, we still see that. We see it in Illinois this week when you start to cut the pensions of state workers, despite the Constitution in that state. When you cut the pensions of current retirees, you see it across the country. We see it in this state, certainly in New York, with this notion of Cuomo saying, we're gonna cut taxes
Democrat,
on the backs of
unquote,
localities.
Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah. And
right.
And so we seeing it everywhere. We're still paying the price for that rhetoric, for that rhetorical shift, and from that policy shift when the Obama administration pivoted. Obviously,
but you know, I mean, and you know, clearly, again, it's not only not representative of what people think. I think when I was on last week, I was talking about that group In the Public Interest and how they showed all these privatization fantasies that weren't true. I mean, the clearest example is, you know, where I live in Cincinnati, in the middle of probably one of the, you know, you'd say the two or three key swing states now, they put raiding the pensions on the ballot here in the city, in an off-year election, mind you, when more of their people were supposed to turn out, right? It lost 80-20. Nobody had predicted that. I mean, nobody polled it, but they thought it was going to be very close. It could go either way, and it was defeated 80-20.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And again, you know, Cincinnati has become a more progressive city, you know, but it's still not New York or San Francisco. All right? So the point is that in a place that I think is relatively representative of where swing states are, I mean, look at that. So, I mean, these guys are still going directly against the will of their voters, and frankly, even the majority of Republican voters, when they're doing this. And that's what's so frustrating about it, is if you would take it to the people and you would go out there and make the correct argument and run a campaign on it, you know, you'd win, if you wanted to win, if you actually are interested in stopping austerity. And that's the big problem now, is that you know, maybe the whole sort of lineup for austerity, the whole kind of belief, as you were pointing out, that the president had, that the Republicans could never do this to defense, is just, in a way, it's sort of emblematic of everything that's happened, because they never think Republicans will do X, Y, or Z. Certainly they won't shut down the government. Of course they won't mess with the debt ceiling. It's just this constant underestimation of how stupid and how these people rule by emotions and myth and not by common sense. Because they don't, you know, and we this just happens again and again.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating. Oh, is it frustrating?
Let's talk just briefly, speaking of the way that they, the Republican mindset. Let's just talk about what happened in Michigan the past week, because it really is this really is a stunning law. There is no
rebranding is going very well.
Michigan is the only is only the ninth state to ban coverage for employer based insurance when it comes to providing abortion services. Now, people should be very clear about what this entails, and we'll talk about the sort of the politics of it in a minute. But most women don't realize that their insurance covers whether or not their insurance covers abortion services. Some percentage of women are shamed into not using their abortion. I think, you know, studies show about 10%. The real need for this coverage, the overwhelming need for this coverage, happens in two instances. One is in when a woman is raped, and
assuming it's a legitimate one,
and results in pregnancy. And the second is when there is abnormal fetal development, and that's not something until you realize until later in the pregnancy, and the cost is exponentially more to deal with that, because it's a far more complicated situation. In those instances, it can cost upwards around $10,000. And so this law that's been passed by the Michigan State Legislature, and we should say, not one Republican, it was passed basically on party lines, not one Republican spoke up against it. It had been vetoed twice before by two Republican governors, including Snyder. And the Republican state legislator overrode that, or did it through a different mechanism that had to deal with a petition. I'm not even sure I understand this, the mechanism. There was an incredible speech given on the floor by Senator Gretchen Whitmer, where she spoke out against this bill and sort of made a decision, I guess, in midstream of that speech to reveal that she had been a victim of rape, to illustrate the implications of this bill. Ostensibly, an insurance company can offer a rider wherein you must predict whether or not you're going to get an abortion. Now, you don't have to do that if you're trying to predict that you're going to get an appendectomy. You don't have to predict that if you're going to have prostate cancer. You don't have to predict that if you're going to need whatever medical service you're going to need, only for abortions. And it's likely that most insurance companies, and that maybe none, will even offer this rider because it becomes less economically viable. That's the nature of insurance. And so you are basically casting these women adrift. We don't know who they're going to be because you can't predict whether or not you're going to get raped. You cannot predict whether or not you're going to have a fetal abnormality. The idea of what constitutes a woman's life in danger, of course, is very difficult to predict at any given point because we don't know, it's just stunning to me.
And I'm sorry, like, I just have to jump in here and say, you know what? It's none of their fucking business. And that's really what it comes down to in the end here, and this is what gets me so mad about this. In the end, you know, again, this is weakness on our part. This is a legal operation, declared legal by the Supreme Court since 1973. And everything beyond that, all the sort of backflips we've done to try to make them happy have only emboldened them. And made, so all the, well, you know, the government funds can't pay for it. Why not? Government funds paid for the war in Iraq. Do I want my taxes going to that? Did I? You know, but we made this exception because people are morally opposed. Well, I'm morally opposed to a lot of things the government did under George Bush. Frankly, a few things it does under Obama. Should I be able to hold back my tax money? I don't give a damn if you're morally opposed. We live in a democracy, and when you lose, you live by that. And when we started by allowing the Hyde Amendment to pass, and since then, everything since then, you know, allowing these guys to get it in people's idea that this is this awful, terrible thing, and that they've got the only interpretation that matters. And, you know, in the end, nobody knows what reality here is here. Women have the right to choose is part of having, for them to have equality and reproductive justice. And I don't give a damn what you think. And before, not you being you, Sam, because I care very much what you think.
Let me add, but before some moron calls in, some libertarian moron calls in and talks to me about whether or not, why should we subsidize abortion care or whatever, any type of contraception, understand that it is actually more expensive. To the extent that this is going to have any implications on insurance coverage, it is going to make it more expensive. There is plenty of data out there that shows that complicated pregnancies, when you talk about fetal abnormalities, when you talk about just simply pregnancy in general, is going to end up costing more for an insurer. Why haven't all of them offered this? Most have. To the extent that some haven't, it is simply because it's toxic politically. But the reality is, when you're talking about cost, if you want to take it down to cost and pretend that this has something to do with cost, know what you're talking about, because from an actuarial standpoint, this is not a cost savings. It increased the costs.
That's always the conservative way, which is to just ignore anything that's preventative and let's pay for it, more of it later. Let's pay a higher price later. And usually the paying the high price later goes to their private sector allies in the form of crony capitalism.
Right.
No, don't try to prevent drug use. Throw somebody in prison later, which costs us a lot more money. No, don't try to prevent somebody from getting sick. Let's just not give them preventative health care and wait till they end up in the emergency room. You know, I mean, this is sort of their solution to everything. You know, and this is another case of that. That, you know, if really these guys really wanted to prevent abortion, you know, they could, because places like Sweden have done it for the most part a lot more than we have. It's called educating people, providing contraception, providing insurance. You know, I work with a group, you know, full disclosure, I've worked with a group that works on this issue, the Bixby Center for Reproductive Health at UC San Francisco, and they just put out a big study about a week or two ago that pointed out that exactly what the Republicans claim to hate, which is abortions after 20 weeks, they are making sure there will be many more of them. Because what are the largest factors that lead to abortions taking place after 20 weeks? Well, golly gee, it's when you end up taking away clinics, end up disappearing, so people either can't get to them because they're too far away, or people don't know where they are, and it's when people lack the funds, either due to a lack of insurance or lack of having money, because we do things like cut food stamps and all sorts of other things, so that they can't afford it earlier on. It takes them longer to get the money together. So these guys who claim to care about this and to be so horrified by abortion after 20 weeks are doing everything in their power to make sure there will be more abortions after 20 weeks. So I really would ask them just to stay the hell out of it, because all they ever do is make things worse. They have no solutions, so that's like they have no solutions for the economy or gun violence or anything else. All they are doing here is creating terrible situations for women, more expense for our society. That's what they're doing. And that's the thing here, is that we can't back down and we can't play nice. We can't, because they're fanatics on this issue like they are in so many other things. And we know how, you know, the point is that we should prevent this so that women don't have to be in a situation where they have to make that choice because they have, you know, if they don't want to get pregnant, they should not get pregnant, and they should be able to have the education, you know, and preventative measures. And, you know, I shouldn't keep putting this on women. It's about men too, being educated and being responsible for their behavior. You know, and this is all doable. We just don't want to do it, or at least the people who control enough of the government don't want to do it. So now we're at a point where we're literally saying to women, oh, by the way, get rape insurance. I mean, we've really gone far enough down the rabbit hole we've gotten there. It's amazing. But I'll say, in terms of Republican rebranding, keep going, guys. You're doing a great job. You know, you guys with this law in Michigan and that moron running for the Senate in Iowa, you know, we need to speak to women in an emotional way. Because they'll only understand that when you use your emotions. And Randy Forbes down in Virginia, congressman who doesn't want to support the two openly gay Republicans who are running for office. You know, good job with the rebranding, guys. Keep it going. You're doing a wonderful job of convincing everybody you actually care about anybody who's not old, white, toothless, ridiculously religious, and doesn't like to spend every day in the Creation Museum.
I want to talk about the Creation Museum, but let me just add one. You know, credit where credit is due. Over the past, I think, particularly the past three years, I would say, that I think the Democrats have finally, you know, whether you want to say it's cynical because they see the value of this or not, but they are finally, we no longer hear that incredibly ridiculous talk of trying to find some common ground. Now, of course, I'm not convinced that talk of finding a common ground from 8 years ago hasn't led us in some respects to this point. But at the very least, someone's gotten the message, and we're no longer hearing that type of ridiculousness now.
Just the way we're moving in a positive direction economically and on gun violence and other issues, where we're tired of the blue dogs and the new Democrats whose methods don't work, whose policies don't work, whose ideas don't work. Certainly the politics of what they're trying to do doesn't work. You know, it's the same thing with this. And let's give credit where credit is due also. You know, I mentioned the Bixby Center I work with before that does great work. But a good friend of mine, and I don't know, you may know her too, Sam, Elise Hogue,
who's
over at NARAL, is doing a fantastic job in not backing down and standing up, you know, and putting together, you know, friends of ours like Liz Winstead and Katie Klavosich, whose last name I'm mispronouncing and will get angry at me, but we love her, who put together this great, you know, online telethon that raised $50,000. You know, with a bunch of celebrities, Sarah Silverman, I think you know her, mm-hmm. Sam. And you know, so people, you know, the grassroots on our side is out there and kicking, and they're kicking butt, and they're done. They're done with giving in. So good for all of them who are doing a terrific job.
All right, so let's turn to something that is a little bit more fun. You have gone on the trip that I have for years, and only been prevented by the existence of my family, wanted to take back when there was talk of this. I made a call to Answers in Genesis to find out what they were planning for the Creation Museum in Kentucky. And in fact,
you have Cooperstown, 2 hours from you. I've got the Creation Museum. Maybe that says something, Sam. I don't know.
Okay, I am holding in my book the holding in my hand, I should say, the Prepare to Believe Journey Through the Creation Museum book that I think when we started this program, this version of the Majority Report a couple of years ago, I would once a week read an excerpt from it. But you've made the journey. Do you believe now? Were you prepared to believe? Did you believe?
I believe, Sam. I'm a believer in a lot of things. Nothing they said there. I was lucky enough.
You wrote a piece for Esquire, and we've linked to it on the at Majority FM.
Thank you. I'm not sure if the piece was quite sarcastic enough for you to link to it.
Right.
Look, you can't help it. If anybody who hasn't read, and doesn't read Charlie Pierce at Esquire, who I think is a national treasure, he went and he wrote a book called Idiot America. And it started off in the Creation Museum about, that's where he started the book, and it made complete sense about how we always have had our cranks, the book was about, but we've now elevated them to positions of authority. And he started off there, and I always thought to myself, I wanted to go there, and I got a quick chance to do it a couple of years ago, but I was only there very briefly, and so I really wanted to get the whole experience. So I went, I got to go with a friend of mine who's an anti-Christian right activist and a novelist, Casey Boyd, and I got to go, Marcy Wheeler, who I'm sure you've had on the show, was in town, and we talked about it, so we went, and Charlie Pierce and the people at Esquire said, they would kindly publish my update on what Charlie had written in the past, and the place is amazing. As I wrote about in the piece, they find a way. It makes you understand the Republican mindset, because everything is, the world was perfect and it was created and wonderful and everything, but then the non-believers among us, led by Eve, that slut who ate the apple.
Right.
They've led to the downfall. Everything from war to Nazism, hunger, you name it, anything bad, not including the Creation Museum, of course, has come from, the fact that we have forsaken God. And so a lot of right-wing movements that have a hell of a lot more in common with them, quite frankly, are our faults. They get pretty clear in some of the people. They even have some of the characters from, Noah's Ark, and they're talking in, Brooklyn Jewish accents. When they were talking about, oi, let's go get on the ark. Would you like some pastrami? Would you like to stop for the pastrami before we get on the ark? It's like the whole place is ridiculous. And then, so you can tell there's the anti-Semitism.
Stop getting in the line with three. Come on.
Exactly. Oh, what are you doing? Huh? And then they've got this film, and I shit you not, they call it Men in White. Based on Men in Black, these two guys who really seem to have almost an attraction to each other, which I find funny too, because we know how it goes in places like that, with the Larry Craigs of the world. And
let's be fair now. At that time, there was no gays, right? I mean, because we didn't get gay people until Will and Grace or somewhere around then, I think.
Well, yeah, I do. I guess I'm skipping around. The main point I made that was the funniest thing overall, and I guess we can go back to Men in White, and it's genius, was the fact that they claim that, there was no war and no poverty and no this and no that. And my response, and a couple of us were like, well, you're saying, before, Eve ate the apple, we're like, yeah, but there were no people. Like, how could there possibly have been any of that if there were no people? It's sort of like, as I wrote in the piece, I was just like, yeah, there also were no NFL head injuries, dropped cell phone calls. Gwyneth Paltrow wasn't harassing us all about our diets. All sorts of terrible things weren't happening back then because there were no people. And so nobody asked that question. They don't sort of put that together. Like before Eve, when there were no people, there were also none of these problems. That's the thing. And then you go and you watch the Men in White, and they try to tell you that.
Let me ask you one thing about that, though. Did they have pictures of dinosaurs cuddling each other before?
They do. They have all these awesome pictures of dinosaurs. We even got one, which I'll send to you if you want to link it, of me and Marcy cuddling with a dinosaur that I assume was like a couple hundred years old. Ike Clanton was riding around taking on the Earps, and they were doing it on brachiosauruses. And they started to make this claim, like they've got some guy that found like a dinosaur bone with all the meat on it, you know, in Montana, like, you know, 50 years ago, which proves that, I don't know, they're, even though if you know anything about science, you know that somebody, they recently found a woolly mammoth frozen in ice, and there was actually still blood in this woolly mammoth because it was frozen in ice. So even if they're saying what happened, you know, even if they're not just making it up, there would be a scientific explanation for that, but they don't bother with that. What they do tell you, though, which is great, because it reminds you of the kind of the projection and hypocrisy on the right. You know how they always accuse us of everything they're doing, right? And so, we're the ones who truly hate the poor and are holding back certain groups of people and all that stuff the right always claims. And here they claim, how can you just, all the holes in Darwinism, how can you just take Darwinism on faith? These guys actually say that.
Right.
They've built their entire thing on faith and have, you know, so it's so worth the best part, it's hard to say the best part, but there's a lot of best parts. There's one part, like you walk in and like you look through these windows and they act at all these parts. There's this woman calling and she wants to get an abortion. Somehow that's our fault because of the society. Some guy's shooting up heroin. You look in another window. I mean, it's awesome. And they have all these like Newsweek and Time magazine covers.
Is that the culture in crisis room?
Yes, I believe it is.
Yeah, looking through the book as we talk.
It's led to jihad. It's led to gays questioning whether they should actually have gay sex, which is, of course, unbelievable. Jesus talked all about that, as you know. Mm-hmm. Big non-fan of the gay sex was Jesus. Although, of course, you know, I'm sure Megyn Kelly went there because she found out there Jesus was white.
Right.
Just that she said that the other day should tell you that is the mentality of that place. Well, look, there's a picture of Jesus, and he's white. He looks very European with the flowing blonde locks, or, you know, that must be how it was. And the culture's in crisis because all of us.
Was Santa there? Did Santa live contemporaneously with Adam and Eve and the animals, or did he come in a little bit later?
I don't know, but I'd love to go running through there dressed as a black Santa just to freak people out.
My favorite, one of my favorite things about the creation book. Is actually like in the prologue, before they even get to the map, they have a picture of six people at the opening of the Creation Museum, and it is literally six 50 to 65 year old white guys, all heavy set, holding a cut. I mean, it really does look like this could very well be like the Elks Lodge or something that they're, but it's the Creation Museum.
And that's kind of my point about the Men in White film and everything else. What's so funny about it is that all the people they have in these films everywhere are white men. All the people questioning themselves, you know, tend to be women. Oh, have I lost my faith? And, you know, in the Men in Black movie or Men in White movie, it's this woman who's lost her faith and she needs the two white guys who are angels. That's why they're men in white, besides, of course, being white, to come down and tell her how, you know, if she would just have her faith, you know, like everything good in the world would happen, right? We'd all like have pasta primavera every night and your whole, whatever team you root for would always win the Super Bowl and the rest, you know, and that's the whole museum, because mostly the people you see anywhere that are doing the right thing are white guys.
Right.
So it's always the other kind of like Republican Party politics, once again, that's taken away this perfect life you could have had, white man. That's kind of the message that you pick up all throughout the museum, which isn't shocking. I mean, it's hysterical. It may hurt you to turn. We got a $5 discount, each of us. I don't know why, but we did. I think we looked like very godly people, probably. So it only cost me, you know, whatever it was, $23.95 or something to get in there. So it does hurt you handing over that money to them.
Yeah, I bet.
On the downside. On the plus side, it's like going to an amusement park or really just sort of, you know, getting stoned, even though none of us do that, and watching a really funny movie. So you really have to, you know, you have to go there and just laugh your ass off. But then, you know, also share the insanity that you encounter with people. And I think then it's a worthy
journey. I think that's
called
spreading the gospel.
I believe it is. And so I'm doing my best to spread the gospel, as they would want any good liberal Jew who grew up in New York City to do. And,
You've certainly done a good job.
I just
want
to do my part,
Cliff. All right, well, Cliffy, thank you so much. Great to hear of that trip. I'm just inexplicably, inarticulably jealous of you.
I've already got a plan, Sam. It involves, I know it's tough for you because I know I live in a flyover state, but right. It's going to involve you getting on a plane and getting off of it, you know, actually in the middle
do
of the country.
Do the planes land there or do you got to jump out? What is that? What
you
is,
do,
what is
you, it's a lot like, I can't remember the name of it, so I can't go
with
dude,
it, I'll be in your neck of the woods. I mean, not quite, but in Michigan for a couple of days celebrating Black Santa Claus Day.
You will be. Is your wife? Does your wife have family from there, or do you actually?
Oh, yeah. No.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so you've got some Midwestern family.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, here's the thing. If you come here, what we could do is the airport is in northern Kentucky. It's like the version of the airport being in, you know, the Newark airport, right? You fly to New York, but you have to actually go through New Jersey kind of thing. And so what we could do is we grab you there, we go drive on the Bourbon Trail in northern Kentucky, get hammered and end up at the Creation Museum, laugh our asses off, and if you do it the right weekend around the right time, you can have the Kentucky Derby going on. So we head on down to Louisville and bet our asses
been,
off on horses.
Been there, done that, buddy. A good friend in college.
But I'm saying we could combine all of that.
Well, that would be
like
pretty crazy.
The Bourbon Trail, the Creation Museum, and the Derby.
Well, if we could do it all in 45 minutes, I could probably get permission to do it. But if
okay,
it's going to be
any
longer
than
45
that.
Minutes, that won't work for me. But Cliffy,
hey, listen, I've learned after the Creation Museum, if Jesus could walk on water and rise on up, and if dinosaurs were riding around in the late 19th century, as far as I'm concerned, 45 minutes, anything can happen. Miracles do occur, Sam.
Cliff Schechter, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next Friday.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. Okay. Thanks, Sam. Bye.
All right, folks. Now, late breaking. Judy Gold will not be able to join us. She was going in for minor surgery today and nothing serious, but apparently she was delayed. I mean, it was not serious enough that we thought we were going to be able to do this segment, but I just got a text saying that she got in there late and they're not, then she's not going to get out. So we're going to have to reschedule Judy Gold, and we're not going to have a movie review.
That's pretty crazy, though, that she was planning to have any sort of surgery and then still come on this show.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding?
Wow.
Well, next time, we're going to have people who do, actually in the midst of major surgery, eventually we're going to get somebody on. All right, so we're going to take a break. Take your call, 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. Breaking format for a Friday, but what do you, it's casual. I don't, it doesn't,
and you freebie listeners have been getting too many freebie
That's
Fridays.
True. That's true. When we
so
come back.
We're cutting that off today.
Yeah, I got plenty to talk about in the funner half of the show, not the least of which what the Pope is doing and some sound from Pat Robertson. So
let's not forget the sign language guy.
Oh, yes. We'll talk about the sign language guy. Sad. It's sad a little bit, but it's also
sad.
Scary. We're going to take a break. 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. We already have a couple of callers on the line. We will get to you in just a moment. You can IM me through the app at, you can get that at majorityapp.com. Folks, don't forget the Credo deal. It's good until tomorrow night, Saturday night. 25% off of unlimited data for 2 years, $350 or up to $350 credit on your Credo bill to switch over. And now they are featuring some new phones. Some new phones that are not Android phones. Wonder what that could be. Check it out. CredoMobile.com/Sam. Also, you can support this program by becoming a member. It is your support that helps keep us independent, that helps keep us from having to go hand in hat to create relationships with wealthy people who, you know, would fund this entire show in one fell swoop as long as I never talked about one thing or another that they're not interested in talking about or always talked about something that they were. We don't want to do that. And we keep ourselves from doing that because of your support. So become a member today at majority.fm. You can also support this program. If you buy crap through Amazon, you have no reason not to buy it through our Amazon link. go to majoritireportkickback.com, click on the Amazon link, bookmark it, buy all your crap that you buy through Amazon. If you buy through Amazon, you might as well do it through our link because we get a kickback. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. It's a great company, great coffee. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Give us a review on iTunes. You know the drill, folks. Help us out. We'll be back in a minute. We'll be back in a minute.